Okay, members, I'm going to call the long-term care division to order. We're just waiting on a quorum. Oh, we have a quorum. Excellent. Thank you, Representative Keel. So I need a motion for the minutes from March 2nd.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Cantrell moves the minutes for March 2nd. Any discussion, corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The minutes adopted. The first bill up on the agenda is Representative Lippert. So I'll let you move the bill once you get to the table. And that's House File 3654. And it looks like you have four testifiers today and some amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, I do. So, Madam Chair, I move that House File 3654 be recommended for re-referral to the Health and Human Services Finance Division.
Okay, to your bill, Representative Lippert, do you want to take up the amendments to get it in the proper order before we
discuss
it?
Yes, please. So I'd also like to move the A2 author's amendment.
Okay, you want to explain the A2 amendment?
So the amendments, there are two amendments. So one is related to the dates. I'm just getting the dates in the correct order. That's the A3. And the A2 is a variety of technical details as well as getting in the proper form.
Okay, so any discussion on A2, we can discuss it once it's incorporated into the bill. So any questions? Okay, all in favor of the A2 amendment being adopted, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the A2 amendment is adopted. And the A3 amendment, it looks like it's just updating the dates, like you said.
Correct. Correct.
So you want to
move the A2 author's amendment as well. A3 author's amendment
Thank
you.
Thank you. So all in favor of moving the A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the A3 is adopted. Now, two-year bill as amended, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Minnesota's Personal Care Assistance Program, which is accessed by 44,000 people, is one of the most cost-effective Medicaid programs in our state, helping older adults and people with disabilities live and work as independently as possible in their communities. The service provided by PCAs, who help with a wide range of personal supports, has been a critical lifeline for thousands of our neighbors, family members, and friends since the 1970s. Today, Minnesota's PCA program and the people who depend on it are in crisis. Over the last 11 years, the program's reimbursement rate has only been increased by $1.56 per hour, an average increase of less than 14 cents per year. Based on 2019 data, the most recent available, the average PCA makes approximately $12.38 an hour, resulting in high turnover, reducing quality, and creating instability in the lives of people with disabilities and older adults. The 2020 comprehensive PCA reform legislation contains two primary elements aimed at stabilizing this critical disability service. The first is a cost-based, data-driven rate framework for PCA services that will better support wages for care providers and increase quality of care for those individuals receiving services. So we heard a version of this proposal in committee last session when we heard Chair Schultz's House File 1225. The rate framework will use workforce and Minnesota market data to recognize the actual cost of providing PCA services and provide the legislature a statutory framework to, over time, build those costs into the system. It would also allow that data to be reevaluated every 2 years so that the PCA program is responsive to the Minnesota economy and maximizes our limited resources to help as many people as possible live safely and work as independently as possible in their communities. In the immediate term, this would increase the PCA rate by 1.65% beginning July 1st, 2020, and help address some of the workforce issues, including the inability of providers to pay overtime to workers with clients who need more than 40 hours of services per week. The 2020 comprehensive PCA reform legislation also includes a number of industry-driven reforms intended to codify best practices and increase program integrity. The bill raises provider enrollment standards to ensure that new PCA agencies have the resources and infrastructure necessary to provide quality services and support best practices in accounting, record keeping, and compliance. It also increases the frequency with which providers need to demonstrate basic compliance with bond, insurance, and other program participation requirements in order to identify non-compliant providers sooner. Finally, the proposal seeks to increase DHS's recovery rate by shortening periods of time where a provider may operate while out of compliance. So that's a general overview of the bill, Madam Chair, members, and I would invite testifiers to come forward at this time.
Okay, I think we're gonna hold off on questions until we hear the testimony. So the first up is Jeff Bangsberg. Mr. Bangsberg, if you want to just state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony when you're ready.
Yep. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Bangsberg. I'm the board chair for the Metropolitan Center for Independent Living. As you may recall, I have testified for the past number of years regarding the critical shortage of personal care assistance for people with disabilities, particularly those with the most highest needs. 2 years ago, the state's OMFED subcabinet approved recommendations of its direct care shortage workforce report. Following those recommendations, our group of consumers, providers, advocates, and others were created to reform the PCA program in order to keep it from imploding upon itself. With technical assistance from the Department of Human Services, the PCA Reform Coalition put together a proposal to address this workforce crisis and make the personal care assistant program more sustainable. This proposed legislation addresses four essential areas. The first, as Representative Lippert had said, it would be to establish a framework to pay personal care assistants a fair wage. And that's done by using standard occupational codes and also developing a wage component and developing a competitive workforce factor to compare PCAs with the industry as we see it today. PCA rates are currently determined only by legislative action, not the market, resulting in PCA wages falling far behind. This new framework would help establish that, address that objective. The second is to build upon the existing enhanced rate for PCAs to provide cares to those who are most severely disabled and therefore find it more difficult to find and retain staff. The third is to strengthen the provider community by supporting both PCA Choice and the PCA Traditional Program Provider Organizations. And finally, to incorporate transparent best practices in order to improve quality and ensure the integrity of the program. To be clear, the PCA program is not part of the Disability Waiver Rate System, otherwise known as DWRS, for people with disabilities. So it was not aided by those reforms that you all passed last year. Our legislation is built on the principle that PCA should be paid the same as those that are paid in the DWRS program. And that will allow us to be built into the forecast, much like all the other long-term care programs and supports. PCAs have no way to get increases like every other long-term care service. And these increases are much less than all the other long-term care programs, even though we're providing similar, if not more, care to those individuals to get them out of bed in the morning and do the most personal and private cares that a person needs to do. Being a PCA is a rewarding but difficult job. PCA wages have to keep up with the market economy, or the PCA program that began 40 years ago will implode. Failing to act will force thousands of clients who rely on this service into more costly institutional settings. And we're experiencing that right now, and you might hear some additional testimony about that. I'm also learning that more and more people are losing employment because they cannot find the direct care staff to get them out of bed in the morning. So thank you for your time, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Banksburg. So next up on the list is, let's see, Dina Belisle?
Belisle.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony and welcome.
Dina Belisle. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dina Belisle. I'm the president of the Minnesota First Provider Alliance, a statewide association of PCA provider agencies with 150 plus members. I run a small PCA agency from my office in Lakeland, Minnesota, but most importantly, I am the mother to my son Anthony, who is 38 years old and severely disabled. He receives 12 and a half hours of PCA services per day. Due to the severe staffing shortage, especially in the rural areas, both traditional agencies and choice clients are struggling to continue to find staffing. Choice providers are leaning more towards the traditional arena by helping clients find staffing for fear of client safety who are trying to go it alone with limited staff. Choice clients often move to the traditional program after exhausting their resources of family and friends. Traditional service often is the last stop before entering more costly programs. In 2017, DHS data showed us there were 43,000 clients receiving PCA services in Minnesota. That number jumped to 44,000 in 2018, which means at a minimum we needed to find an additional 1,000 PCAs to meet the need of those new clients. Currently, there are over 5,000 unfulfilled PCA job openings in our state. Based on demographic trends, the number of clients receiving PCA services and the number of PCAs required to serve those clients is expected to continue to increase each year. If we don't find a way to support recruitment and retention of more PCA workers, far too many individuals will go without their assessed PCA service and lose their right to live independently in their home. As a provider who is also a mother, I can tell you there is nothing more frustrating than having to tell clients that we cannot help them, that we are all stretched too thin. We have seen 7 agencies shut their door this past year as a result of not having enough primary staff or backup staffing for their current clients. PCAs are some of the most dedicated, hardworking employees. We see that especially during the winter months with bad weather and extreme temperatures. PCAs often risk their own safety to get to the client's home, knowing they are relying on them to get them in or out of bed with toileting, mobility, performing their complex health needs, medication reminders, preparing their meals. Often that PCA is the only person the client will see all day. These hardworking PCAs deserve to earn a livable wage. I believe House File 3654 would enable us to address the challenge of those already caring for our most vulnerable and assist PCA providers to reach other potential workers who have never considered working as a PCA because of the low wages and lack of benefits. The proposed PCA rate framework will begin to improve reimbursement for the PCA program, resulting in lower staff turnover, which is crucial for many reasons. Familiarity with the client creates the ability to detect a potential health concern early, which is vital to the well-being of the client. The Minnesota First Provider Alliance and the PCA Reform Coalition have worked for 2 years on a variety of proposals and reforms intended to bring stability and sustainability to the PCA program. We are all desperately working together to find solutions to the workforce shortage and establish best practice and higher integrity standards. This bill is an important step in ensuring that thousands of families like mine throughout the state can care for their loved ones. Thank you so much for your support and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Belisle. Next up is Katrina Simmons.
I
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Simmons. If you just want to state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you. My name is Katrina Simons.
Simons, sorry.
Okay, I'm just going to read my testimony. Chair Schultz and members of the committee, my name is Katrina Simons, and I live with cerebral palsy, which is a developmental disability that impairs motor control and function to a significant degree. I use a power wheelchair for primary mobility. I live in an apartment and I work at a job that I love, which utilizes my skill set and allows me to help others who also live with developmental disabilities. I need help from others every single day, twice a day, to complete the basic tasks that allow me to live and work independently, including getting out of bed, showering, dressing, getting meals set up, packing for the day, and then at the end of the day, we have to do the reverse. Because cerebral palsy impacts my ability to function without the help of other people, I use the state personal care assistance program, and I use the choice variant within that program to complete all of those tasks I listed above so that I can continue to live independently instead of in a nursing home or more costly setting, and so that I can work in my community. However, because the current wages paid to PCAs are some of the lowest of all available jobs, there is currently a crisis level shortage of PCAs. Due to this, I can hardly find enough PCAs to come and work for me. I have to spend many hours each week working to confirm which PCA might be willing to cover which shifts, sometimes having to work around the schedules of those that are willing to come, and sometimes going to bed, not yet having confirmed 100% who can come in the morning or at what time. I fear a nursing home placement may be in my future if this workforce shortage is not mitigated in the immediate future. I grew up in St. Paul with my family. I went to St. Paul Public Schools, and I kept up with my classmates academically. I followed the challenge track and graduated high school with good grades. I moved to Wisconsin for college and also earned competitive standing while there. When I returned from college and got my first job, I got a part-time job in my field of study on a project that I wanted to be a part of. When that job ended because of funding cuts, I started looking for other similar jobs that I knew would suit my strengths. I found three specific positions that I was well suited for, but had to turn down because the PCA staffing crisis does not allow me to have predictable times to get out of bed each morning, since the workforce I am relying on is unstable. My current job is understanding and accommodating of these scheduling complexities, but I fear what will happen if I ever need to look for another job. This session, I am asking everyone to support the PCA Reform Bill, House File 3654, and its companion bill, 3457. The primary aim of this bill is to establish a long-term pay rate setting framework for the PCA program and institute an immediate pay raise for current PCAs. These steps would allow for slightly higher wages for PCAs and would begin to reduce the staffing crisis, the staffing shortage in the coming years. That would mean that myself and people like me could stop working, that we might be worrying that we might be placed into a nursing home within the next year or two, which is a real worry for many, many, many of us. I would also like to note that many of my PCAs who work for me do a wonderful job, two in particular. I've had one for 5 years and one for seven. And I can understand why they have to make the decision to leave working for me to go make more money somewhere else. In closing, I would like to say that I so value my ability to live and work and contribute to my community. Over the past decade, the future of Minnesota's PCA program has become increasingly uncertain due to low wages and the resulting workforce shortage. Please think of me and others like me in this moment when you and your colleagues have the opportunity to work to pass this bill to make sure that the PCA program stays available to people who need it. There are many other Minnesotans who also benefit from the PCA reform bill that cannot tell you their story. I would like to extend my gratitude for your continuous efforts to keep the PCA program serving as the lifeline that it is for so many people who live in Minnesota. Thank you so much for your time and allowing me to share my story.
And I think we have one question for you, Ms. Simon. So if you want to just stay at the table.
Sure.
Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lippert. And thank you so much, Ms. Simons, for coming and sharing a little bit about your experience with us today. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to ask one kind of brief follow-up question. So as a result of some of the difficulties that you've seen with being able to have that stability among your PCAs, mm-hmm. Have you had a difficult time finding personal care assistants or people who are willing to really be committed to being there?
Yeah. So the average week has 14 shifts per week if I'm healthy, and I fill about six.
Wow.
So there's eight left unfilled per week.
And Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Simons.
You're welcome.
Do you mind if I ask then? So what then happens if you are unable to get that PCAs to fill the remainder of those shifts? I apologize.
That's fine. So then my family and friends have to leave their jobs and come help me, and so then they also aren't getting to work because they're helping me.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Simons.
No problem.
Any other questions for Ms. Simons? Oh, go ahead, Ms. Simons.
No, I was just going to ask if there are more questions.
Well, thank you for your testimony for coming here today.
You're welcome. I have copies if you'd like to read it later.
Thank you. Okay. Next up is Jim Lavold. Is Jim Lavold here to testify? Here he is. There's Jim. Welcome to the committee. If you just want to state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
I will. My name is Jim Lovold, L-O-V-O-L-D. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is James Lovold, and I live in St. Paul. I have spina bifida and currently am eligible for up to 10 hours of personal care services per day. Thank you for letting me share my story. Here's my story about how the personal care assistant PCA staff shortage has impacted my life. It started for me in January of 2019. Last year, I ended up getting sick and ended up in the hospital for a few weeks to treat an infection I was dealing with. When it came time for me to get discharged from the hospital, I had nobody waiting for me when I got home. I had already had a skeleton crew at this time. I was forced to go to a transitional care unit, otherwise known as a TCU. Because there was no PCAs available at the company that I was with at the time, while in the TCU, I looked at different PCA agencies to find someone to take care of me. I found one. It didn't last long. I found out that they really didn't have enough people to cover the hours for me. So I had to go back to the TCU. But before I can do that, I must go to the emergency room. It's procedure. Admission is necessary to have time to find an open bed at a TCU. The average time of this process takes about 3 days to get an open bed. The whole process happened at least two more times, each time having returned to the emergency room. Trying a different agency each time, trying to find one that was able to find the people to cover that was necessary, I was allotted. Can you imagine the cost of the hospital stays that were paid for by the taxpayers? Not to mention the daily rate for a room at a TCU. Sometimes stays lasting weeks while I'm searching for the right person for the job or a different company. Rooms averaging over $300 a day. again at taxpayers' expenses. We can't wait for the raise to happen. We need action right now before someone else like me ends up in nursing homes for life because of the lack of proper pay for the PCAs. Please hear me now and take care of this for me and the other people this is affecting. I've had a PCA quit because it costed him more in gas to go back and forth than it was worth. He had to go find different work with more pay so he could survive. He went from being paid $10.50 to $11.50 an hour in 10 years' time. Again, please give these caregivers the money they deserve for their job. They do. Thank you for hearing my story of my experiences with PCA shortage, and please raise the pay before this happens again to possibly someone else. I don't want to see this happening. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lavold. Just stay there one second. Let's see, does anyone have questions for this testifier, Mr. Lavold? No, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Are there any other testifiers from the public who would wish to testify? No, okay, any questions, members, for the bill's author? Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Lippert. Mm-hmm. Just a couple questions. Do PCAs qualify for benefits, like health insurance or anything like that?
I think Ms. Simons may have a response to that.
Sorry, I can stand right here.
You can sit down, please.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Do they qualify for benefits?
Representative Grunhagen, do you want to repeat the question?
Okay, Madam Chair. Yeah, just wondering if PCAs qualify for benefits like health insurance or things like that.
No health insurance, though I do offer health insurance in my agency, and some agencies do. It's very hard to afford insurance for on our low reimbursement rate of $17.80. Under choice that is represented by the union CBA contract. They do have PTO and holiday under that portion. Under traditional, not so much, because we don't have to follow that union contract, and we just don't have enough.
Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, so you own an agency for PCAs, correct?
I do. I provide both traditional and choice services.
Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, that's kind of who I wanted to talk to. You know, on page number 7, it talks about the training that's mandated for PCAs. You know, I get concerns out in the rural area by firefighters and some other volunteers about the mandated training, which I'm sure is well intended. But do you find the training to be updated occasionally, or is it duplicative and redundant? In other words, is it a barrier to people entering sometimes, or do you think it's necessary and updated on a regular basis as far as the training for the PCAs?
Ms. Bilal, would you like to try to answer that?
So Matthew Bergeron just told me that what you're discussing right now is training for the agency.
For the agency.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not for training for the PCAs.
Oh, yeah. I read the wrong side here. Okay, go ahead.
So I believe that training for the Steps for Success class is a 3-day training that is being kind of revamped right now, that every agency owner administrator would have to attend. So we believe that we should have like a 2-year training to update for policy updates and keep people more informed, agencies all informed of what the new policies are and the new legislation is. Under choice and traditional, if you're talking about PCA training, the PCAs under choice are trained by the client. So they handle most of that training. and our QP supervises every 6 months for them. Under traditional training of a PCA, our QP has to go out every 90 days for training for the PCA to make sure. For example, my clients are, most of them are very high needs, complex people, bent dependent. So we would never allow a PCA to go into a home. They get trained in our office over and over again until we can make sure, and then my QP goes with them to the home for continuous training to make sure they're qualified to do that work.
Can you tell us what QP stands for?
The Qualified Professional. Mm-hmm. In my case, it's an RN.
Okay, thank you. Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to, sorry for the way I confused that. Actually, I had things in reverse of what I wanted to ask them. But, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you find either with the training of the PCAs that are the requirements or the agencies, especially if a new agency is coming in, sometimes I think we build a barrier rather than a fence to let people in? Or do you think the requirements by the agency that supervises this are adequate and not duplicative or redundant? I hope you see what I'm getting at. In other words, have we created through these requirements a difficulty becoming an agency, staying an agency, or the training of the PCA?
So in my opinion, I think the 3-day Steps for Success class that's required by all people applying to become a provider agency. And by the way, currently there's 482 of those agencies going through revalidation right now. That Steps for Success class is a 3-day, a very extensive training, and I think it's very good training. And I don't think it, actually we see providers that drop out after taking that 3-day success class because they realize that they may not be qualified to do it. So I don't think there's barriers for that. DHS really make sure that people are trained and are revamping that training to be able to continue using that resource available like online, because people come out and they don't remember 3 days of training. So they'd be able to go back to something like that with a module training, which we really support.
President Grunhagen, so it looks like they do that training every 2 years to stay certified?
Nope, that is absolutely mandatory before you become a provider. And we often go back and, like, our QPs have to go do it. And so we often, as agency owners, currently just go back and jump in and do it again for a refresher. But we want to encourage more training, especially for agency owners. As you know, this system changes. Mm-hmm. Policy changes very quickly. And some people aren't aware that there's an e-list announcement to get signed up for. And this will keep providers up to date with any changes, making them better providers.
Thank you. And it looks like Mr. Bangsberg would like to testify. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen. With regards to the agency, it's important for them to understand all of the policies and procedures. As far as the PCA is concerned, it's always been desired to keep that as flexible as possible. And that's one reason why the CHOICE program was started in the first place, the PCA CHOICE, is it would allow the actual individual receiving the care to provide that training themselves. And actually, that provides a little extra money then to be paid for that PCA. When the agency has to do traditional services, they're responsible for providing that training. Now, the training that you might be concerned about, we really want to have it for those individuals that have very high complex needs, mm-hmm. or those that require 12 or more hours of care. Then we have it's in there that the reimbursement rate is 7.5% higher. For two reasons. One is to pay the personal care assistant because it's much harder to care for those high need clients. And the second reason is because it is a more difficult job, and we want to make sure that those PCAs get that knowledge that they need to do the important things that they need to do to make sure somebody does not get a pressure ulcer or somebody does not get an infection like Jim and go into the hospital. So there is two differences here.
Okay. Representative Keel.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Lippert. This has been a long slog. Mr. Bangsberg, we've worked a long time on this. Tell me, I know you have a spouse with you, but tell me what happens to people who someone doesn't show up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, unfortunately, I have lost a few friends that have passed away because of this. That is one reason why I came back to the legislature 4 years ago to start working on this issue. The other unintended consequences that people will get, you have to go to the emergency room, as Mr. Lavold had indicated, and go into a transitional care facility, which when we do fiscal notes on this legislation, we can't offset those costs in those fiscal notes, which is thousands and thousands of dollars that would go to an institution as opposed to a personal care assistant. But we want to make sure that those high need clients have the proper amount of knowledge when they go into a client's home to provide that care, because the individual that I am referring to that lost his life had more complex care needs, and the caregiver just decided not to show up, and unfortunately that gentleman went without care for the entire weekend and did not survive. So it's a very, very stressful situation. But on the other end of that spectrum, we would like to keep the program, and I know the department wants to keep the program, flexible enough so people can train their own direct care staff, so we do not create that barrier, if you will, Madam Chair and Representative Grunhagen and Representative Keel.
Can I add one thing?
Sure, go ahead. So
what Jeffrey's talking about is mostly the choice program, and a traditional, an agency is responsible for finding that backup and having backup for that client. So we get calls at 6 a.m. on Sunday morning, I better have staff for that person to go in there and get them out of bed. The problem is we no longer have the resources to have somebody on call, which I have done in the past, and many of us have. Keep a PCA on call on the weekends, even if they're not working. That safety net was huge for us. We don't have that anymore. So we better have that backup, and that's why so many agencies are shutting down now.
So is it because you don't have that backup on call because we just don't have enough PCAs to fill that?
We don't have enough
on call demand.
Yep. But we go through our roster and beg and see if we can get lucky on a Sunday morning at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning.
Okay. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that in my district, Jeff knows my friend Mickey very well. She's a quadriplegic and runs a PCA service. And the challenges, you, Representative Grunhagen, you talked about benefits. Part of the challenges are that they're not big enough to provide the necessarily benefits, because she also serves the Red Lake Nation and the White Earth Nation, and so they have different kinds of benefits. And she tries to match people up with maybe cultural matches or just understanding what the client needs, which I like the choice program, because I really think that's important that the client is educating the caregiver, because there are so many individual things that have to happen for people. But this is going to be a challenge just to find people that can do this job, that are qualified, and more importantly, that have the passion for it. This is something that you really need the passion for. Caring for people is important. And so thus, it also, there does need to be that reimbursement, because they have their own costs, and it's very important. So anyway, I just have worked on this with Mr. Bangsberg too, and it this is just a really complicated problem. So I thank you, Mr. Bangsbird, and of course, Representative Lippert for bringing this forward, and all the advocates. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative McKeel. Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I really appreciate Representative Lippert, you working so hard on this issue. As you know from our conversations, I worked as a personal care assistant for 7 years, and actually contemporaneous to my running for the legislature, I still worked as a personal care assistant because it's something that I love to do.
Thank you for your service.
It's been my pleasure. there you go. This is a prescient conversation. Absolutely. Well, as you know, I'm retiring, so we might have. No, I'm kidding. But so. One question that I wanted to ask you, and I'm sorry, what was your last name?
Belial.
Have you noticed, Madam Chair, have you noticed a significant decrease kind of over the last few years in the number of people willing to work as personal care assistants?
I started my agency in 2008, mm-hmm. and I have aging parents now that are taking care of their adult 50-year-old that have always wanted to stay home, and I can't find one person to come in so they can go get groceries, mm-hmm. It is unbelievable how sad it has gotten.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier. I couldn't agree with you more. It's extremely unfortunate because I know a lot of folks who, you know, they love to serve people and they love to work with people. However, you know, people have to make economic decisions, and not to say it's just kind of an outline of our current predicament that we're in. You know, I worked, as I said, as a personal care assistant for 7 years, and I believe my starting wage was $12.06 an hour, and I ended at $13 flat an hour over that span of nearly a decade of working in the same field. And I did that because it's really something that I think people with a passion for helping folks is drawn to. So in your experience, Madam Chair, to the testifier, what do you think we can possibly do to really create those incentives? I mean, since you're the person who's kind of on the, or you folks are on the front lines, I think it's always important to hear from you about what you think we can do to increase, the amount of folks.
I've been sitting on a lot of workforce shortage committees and working with Jeffrey and Jesse's MCIL group that is trying to do a career latticing. Mm-hmm. Making it a respectable career is mm-hmm. one big, huge thing we could do. Mm-hmm. And I think reaching, oftentimes people keep saying we'll reach the young people, but often older people, I've gotten some really great PCAs from the senior center that have lost their spouse and are, in 60, and they have been a godsend for us. It's just to be able to reach more people and let them know that this is an amazing job and it could be a whole career path for them. There's a lot of people that say, well, they use this and go to CNAs and become nurses and doctors. Great, but while they're doing all that schooling, stay here with us and give somebody the ability to stay in their home longer.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you again to the testifier, and I'm sorry, Representative Lippert.
No, I would just add, Representative Cantrell, that I think it's just critical that we're valuing this work, that we're valuing the work of caring for people with disabilities, and this right framework will be a critical change in that. And so it's a huge step, and it's a very competitive work environment, but we have to be paying people. That's foundational.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We know this is an industry that's been in crisis for years, both from the client perspective and the provider perspective. And so really appreciate Representative Lippert bringing this forward. And the sooner we can get this passed and done would be huge. And I do want to say, this is not work everybody can do. I mean, it's an incredible, I would think, emotional toll as well as physical ability. And so it really is incumbent upon us to do what we can to provide stability. And that's the other thing. And for some people that need it, they really need to be able to see the same person again and again. So again, I really support this, and let's get it done.
Thank you, Representative Mason. So thank you, Representative Lippert, for bringing this forward. I know that when, having worked on the disability waiver rate system rate reform last year, that this is a lot of work, but very important work, and it makes no sense that we're paying PCAs a different rate in DWRS and in the PCA system. So we need to make sure we're being fair and just and equalizing those wages and increasing those wages quickly. So there is a huge shortage. I've heard 15,000. We need 15,000 PCAs. So this is just the beginning of our solution. We really also need a bill to increase wages so they're competitive in the market, so we can attract strong, high-quality PCAs. So I thank you for bringing the forward. And you're going to have the last word on this bill, and then you can make
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank everyone who testified today. It's clear from testimony we heard that this is a critical issue, that lives are at stake. And so this is extremely important legislation with both a rate structure and program integrity pieces. We can take a big step forward towards addressing these challenges. So I urge support for the bill.
So you
want to? So I'll renew my motion that House File 3654, as amended, be recommended for re-referral to the Health and Human Services Finance Division.
So we need to vote on that motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you, Representative Lippert, and testifiers. Thank you for coming today. Okay, on to Representative Cleavorn's bill, House File 2182. Like, we have two testifiers and an author's amendment. So Representative Cleavorn, I'll let you make that motion to move your bill, and we can then adopt the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair. I've just learned that one of our testifiers is out ill today, taking the advice to stay home when necessary.
Mm-hmm. Good advice.
Yeah. Thank you for allowing us to be here today, Chair Schultz. I move that House File 2182 be recommended for re-referral to Health and Human Services Finance Division.
Excellent. And would you like to pass or introduce your amendment now to get the bill in order?
Yes, please. Chair and members, there is an AE2 amendment to this bill. This bill is currently has been heard in the Senate, and what this amendment does is bring it in line with the Senate language. It also increases the amount of money that from 2019 we had $200,000 in the bill, and this year we have $500,000 in the bill. So I'd like to draw your attention to that. And then it also changes the date from start date from 2020 to 2021. And as I said, it's primarily to put the language in the same order as in the Senate bill.
Do you want to move the amendment?
I make a motion for this amendment to be adopted and the bill be considered as amended.
Okay, so the motion is to adopt the A2 amendment to House File 2182. Those in favor signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, amendment adopted. Now to your bill, Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 2182 was introduced in 2019, and what it does is it helps address the PCA workforce shortage that we just heard in Representative Lippert's bill. It requires Health Force Minnesota to develop a pilot project. It specifies where the pilot projects will be located, and it requires Health Force Minnesota to evaluate the pilot project's impact on healthcare costs, retention of PCAs, as well as the patient and provider's satisfaction. For those in the audience who may not know, Health Force Minnesota is located at Winona State University. I would welcome my testifier having an opportunity to speak.
Okay, so do you want to introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Diane Drost, and I have prepared something to read to you, so don't get distracted. I am a wife, a mother, and a grandmother, and a retired special ed teacher. As a teacher, I worked for many years advocating for students with physical and health disabilities. Now, as the parent of an adult daughter who has sustained a cervical spinal cord injury, I am advocating for her, along with many others in the spinal cord injury network. Today, they along with other people living with significant physical and health disabilities in the community, are at great risk. Our families are desperate for help. Many of us are providing care to our loved ones, but as we age, it has become more challenging. My daughter, Samantha, sustained a high cervical spinal cord injury after her first year of college. Despite this injury, which left her with quadriplegia, she continued on and received a double major in math and economics from Augsburg and is currently working on her master's degree at St. Thomas. She works part-time as a senior analyst at Target. She pays her taxes and has health insurance through her work. The problem is, I'm getting older, and if and when I can no longer care for my daughter, she will be forced to leave home and the community and move into a more restrictive and expensive setting. Sam won't be able to hold a job or maintain family and community involvement if that happens. Early after my daughter's accident, we were able to easily recruit college students to work in our home. However, with the high cost of college, many are now seeking higher paying jobs, which may also offer additional recruitment incentives such as scholarships and loan forgiveness. Our group, Women Staying Strong, is a support group for women who have family members who have sustained spinal cord injuries. While I am a member of Women Staying Strong, and our group has brought this bill to you, we do this as members of a larger community. We need your help. Home care, personal care assistants are the lowest paid workers in the home and community-based services workforce. We have also learned that many of these workers would rather work with others who require less physical demands while receiving equal, if not more, pay. This makes recruitment even more challenging for people in light of the current workforce shortage. People like Sam are limited in their ability to offer recruitment incentives when compared to what larger organizations can offer. Many large organizations and agencies have internal staff and resources needed to apply for grants and foundation dollars, along with other funding resources, which helps them recruit and retain workers. The workforce shortage also exists in other industries in our state. College students who are enrolled in high-demand programs in advanced manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare services, or information technology at state colleges can apply for workforce development scholarships. Why not offer students in other fields of study similar incentives if they agree to work part-time with our state's most vulnerable citizens while they're in school? Many students have heart and desire to work with our population, but they need to pursue higher paying jobs due to the high cost of college. We need to bring them back. I am also a member of the Olmsted Subcabinet Cross Agency Direct Care and Support Workforce Shortage Working Group. That's the group that Jeff was talking about. This working group has produced many reports and work plans and has set as strategic priorities of future actions which, if implemented, could produce meaningful progress towards alleviating the direct care and support workforce shortage in Minnesota. One of the recommendations is to expand the workforce by developing a service corps. Information on this is included in the materials that I provided to the committee. Last year, we had a bill in the Senate and in the House in which Health Force Minnesota were to develop a pilot program. It made it all the way to the omnibus bill, but it did not get sent to the governor. Our group is asking you that you support the Minnesota Direct Care Service Corps pilot project. This pilot will benefit not only people with disabilities, but also help college students with the high cost of college. We believe that we can mobilize an entire generation of students who would be willing to work as PCAs in home care settings with our most vulnerable and at-risk population. Thank you for allowing me to share my story.
Thank you, Ms. Drost. Any questions for the testifier or for the underlying bill? No questions? Well, thank you, Representative Cleavorn, for bringing this bill forward again. Would you like to do you have any final remarks that you would like to share with the committee?
I would just like to say this is such a wonderful opportunity to connect young people with the needs of our state while helping them pay for their college while they serve our community. But also, too, it raises an awareness all across our state of the needs that people have and the struggles that they may have just having an ordinary life. And as I look at our parents who are serving their children's needs now uncompensated, I just think it's something that we could do that benefits many, many levels of our families and helps bring that next generation of caregivers forward. And it may be an opportunity for Representative Cantrell as well.
This is true. Okay, thank you. So I'll, Go ahead. You're gonna make your motion again?
Yes, I would just like to renew my motion to re-refer House File 2182 to Health and Human Services as amended.
Excellent. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. It's on its way to HHS Finance. Motion adopted. Thank you all. So next week, we're going to take up a variety of different topics, mostly addressing the area of disabilities and tweaking the DWRS framework structure. So members, have a great Monday. Thanks for coming. We're adjourned.